My first cousin in England died the other day, and she was going to be 100 on my birthday, August 22nd. She was 10 years older than I, and she was hoping to live to be 100 because she would receive a letter from the Queen of congratulations. But I'm going to be 90.
Well, you've got 10 years to get a letter from the Queen.
The Queen won't acknowledge my birthday, I don't think. Maybe Clinton would. I don't want to skip around, but what, you want to look at anything?
Sure, I'm going to look at everything. But well, you were telling me about the family house. Why don't you continue that?
Oh, the living room and the bay window were all redwood paneling, and still are, untreated. And going through the butler's pantry to the kitchen, there was a solid piece of redwood for the door, you know. I should have kept it, would have made a beautiful table or something. But when I had it remodeled, I asked Gus to, or maybe he suggested lightening the redwood by putting a coating of thin, I guess, paint or something. You know how they do make it?
Yes.
But it's still very beautiful.
When was that?
When I had it remodeled, it was, the date you want to know.
Just approximately.
I'm trying to figure out how I can figure it out. My aunt lived there alone at the time. I inherited the house with a provision that my father and aunt lived there till they died, rent-free, you know. My mother left it to me that way. And so when my aunt did die, I asked Gus, he was a very good friend of mine, and I asked him what he thought, should I rebuild it or tear it down? And he suggested that I remodel. And it was funny because the kitchen had been on the west side, and Gus took and put the kitchen on the east side, which made so much sense because the sun would beat down in the kitchen in the afternoon. And I remember my mother being so on hot days in Mill Valley. You know, you live in a different part of Mill Valley than I lived in. Entirely different. It's much cooler. Mm-hmm. More trees at that time.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gus remodeled. And he did a fabulous job. It's a very interesting house still, because he had very original ideas. He did, like the El Paseo, you know, he did that. And then he planted the trees in Mill Valley, or had them planted.
He downtown?
Downtown, yeah.
Well, you were telling me that the house was back to front when it was built.
So we had a driveway, and we owned the property, so we had a barn for the horses, two-stall barn, and a pasture. Otherwise, I mean, it was enclosed, which made it a pasture safe to put them. They could have almost run free. There were no houses around, none. That was the only house. And we had the driveway going around the house and then over to the barn. And my father, I told you, was always talking about turning the house around. But then we began to like it because it was so private, you know. If people came to visit, we had complete privacy because it wasn't facing the street. And I sold it, oh, I don't know how many years ago, 15 years ago. I wish I could remember dates. I could do it. I could put it all with dates. Uh-huh. I did a little research. But anyway, they've changed it now. And the man who bought it, I had built a guest house. Because when I was a widow, the first time, I had a little daughter. And my aunt thought I should build a little guest house. So it was on the same piece of property.
That's the house that faces Locust.
Yeah, that was the...
And the original house is back, farther back from Locust.
Well, see, the driveway went around like that. And the house I called 92. And I designed that and was my own contractor. Never again. But they divided the piece of property. So there's a long driveway up to 92, and there's no driveway around the main house anymore. And there was almost a flower bed at the front part of the front door. And in the beginning they planted palms. Must have been the thing to do. And there were two of they all have dates, but not the commercial date palms. But we had about six or eight of those too. But we had these great huge palms. And it must still be there.
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, that's about 100 years old, isn't it?
Yes.
1903.
Well,
90. Oh, the house was built just in time for me to be born in it. In 1903, it was finished. And then my brother was born there, too. But then there are all these other, like, date palms, the kind of topiary at the top, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, the palm in front of the front door, in front of the house, one day it just keeled over. The gophers had eaten all the roots of the palm tree. It just was dead. So there's only that big one. But isn't that a big one?
Yes. I think they must have been big gophers.
Big gophers?
Yeah, to eat the roots from that tree.
I think so, too. Well, it was long. It wasn't so big, though, then.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I think you better look at something, yeah.
Okay. You said your mother subdivided the property.
My mother owned it. My mother inherited, as part of the Reed estate, quite a good amount of acreage. And she owned, you know where the Reed land grant is?
Yes.
He didn't build the old mill on his own property.
No. No.
But in those days, they had no surveyors or anything. I mean, they didn't have the land surveyed. And they went by a rock or a tree or other kinds of things to delineate the lines. Must have been interesting. And he owned, you know, where the grant went, all of Belvedere,
yes,
Grand Paradise, up to the foot of the mountain. And my mother inherited that area around Mill Valley. And a lot of marshland. You know where the Safeway is across from the high school?
Yes.
That was all even flood over years ago, marshland. And she paid taxes on that. And after about 10 years of paying, she found out she was paying double of what the adjoining property was being taxed. They were assessing it at double the amount of the other. She went to the courthouse and asked them why. And they said, we're trying to break up the big landowners. She still didn't get any money back. But they did. Bothine was the man who owned next door. Mm-hmm. You know the history of Mill Valley. You do, I think.
Some of it.
Why are you so interested in... Are you interested in history?
Oh, yes, very much. Yes. I've always liked history.
You write very well.
Thank you.
Are you going to write a book?
Well, it seems like a big project.
It is, I imagine. I'm trying to write a family history.
Are you?
Just for my offspring, mm-hmm. My family.
Are you making progress with it?
I was for a while, but I don't know whether... I should have all the time in the world, but I don't. Every day isn't enough time.
Well, when we try to get things done, we sort of juggle our time.
That's right. And everything in the family, I seem to have the leftovers from my uncle, my father, my two husbands, and I have it all. And I don't know, I don't think they were all pack rats, but they had an awful lot of things, you know. And it's hard to go through all that.
Yes, it is.
Especially if you become interested. You just sit there and look and read, and that's what I've been doing, looking for you, I was looking off. This is, where the Lyford's Cove.
Sure.
Well, these are all pictures of Lyford's. And that little house that they moved across the water,
mm-hmm.
That was my great Lita Lyford's house. And I donated some of the furniture. I found a thank you thing saying thank you.
Oh, that's nice.
The original furniture.
The house looks very good. I've been in there, and they're very proud of it.
Who you are?
The people at the Audubon Ranch and the people that maintain that house are very proud of it.
When I donated the furniture, it was Mrs. Livermore. It was a conservation society in mm-hmm. Marin. Is it still?
Yes. Yes. And the Audubon Society, I think they're all joined together now.
Oh, they are?
They all share that. They share that piece of property.
And Rosie, who lived next door, the goat lady.
Yes.
Well, someone in my family was very fond of Rosie. It was my Uncle John's son, John Joseph Reed. And he wanted to marry Rosie when they were both very young. But Rosie kept turning him down. Anyway, she was alone when John Joseph Reed died, and he gave her that property because they had been tenants and her parents had rented it. And they raised, what did they raise? I don't know, but they, well, you know where it is? It couldn't have been a farm. But anyway, it wasn't goats. But she became quite famous because, you know, she gave it with a life. They'd take care of her for the rest of her life. She was pretty. Did you ever see a picture of her?
No. No, I don't remember seeing a picture of her.
She was very pretty. But she wouldn't marry Johnny, so he left her the whole. I thought that was nice.
Very nice.
I've got to stop talking or I won't be able to talk anymore. Did I finish on 90 Locust? I didn't. I don't know. These are interesting.
These look very old.
They do?
Yeah. When do you think they were?
Not as old as this.
That one's the oldest.
What is that letterhead for?
Dr. B.F. Lyford's Eagle Dairy.
Yeah, well.
And the blank on here says 189 and the year is left out, so it was from the 1890s.
Well, Dr. Lyford.
And a lot of cows.
He was written up in the Smithsonian, Dr. Lyford was. He and another doctor during the Civil War operated on the wounded in a tent on the battleground. This was when he was early in his life. And there was an article in the Smithsonian about the two doctors. And Lyford was one, but he was an inventor. He was always, and that little, there's a little like a railroad thing that was his laboratory. There it
that
is.
That little building? I was looking
yeah.
at that.
And he was the first person to successfully embalm a body so that it could be shipped to Europe.
Oh.
Up to that point, no one had been, they couldn't ship a body. But he invented something so that they could ship, you know, that they'd preserve it longer. He was an eccentric, and he married my great aunt, and he was an opportunist, of course. Most people who came to California were opportunists, weren't they?
Well, it was the great frontier, the great land of opportunity.
Yeah, even my great-great-grandfather, Reed, must have been an opportunist. He left home when he was 16 years old. But he was born in Dublin, Ireland. I always figured they probably had so many children that they were glad to get rid of one. To, you know, it was tough to raise a bunch.
Do you know anything about the family in Ireland?
Nobody does.
No.
He sailed from Dublin with an uncle who owned a sloop or a ship. And the next thing he landed in Acapulco in Mexico. And he decided he liked it there, and he stayed there, and I imagine making a living at fishing, which was profitable. And then one time these two young men, his age, landed from San Francisco in Acapulco, and the three young men became good friends, and they persuaded John Reed to sail back to San Francisco with them. He'd been in Acapulco for 4 or 6 years, but he had learned to speak fluent Spanish. And these two fellows were the sons of the comandante of the Presidio, Sanchez, Don Jose Sanchez, and he is my, he's related. He was, his daughter married Reed. You know that story.
Know that story, yeah.
And then, I can, in my writing, I can put in a lot of intimate, personal things. My mother was extremely interested in history, and she kept everything, and she told me so many interesting things about the family. And she was very proud of her heritage. And so I have a lot of information, if I could just get it down.
Collect it all. Yeah?
Well, would you like a coffee or ginger ale?
Oh, not for me, thanks.
Pepsi? But
you have something if you like.
No, I don't like right now, thanks. Anyway, I thought you'd be looking at all these
okay,
things.
Okay, I'll look at some of these things there.
But just don't, I don't want to direct you. You do. I can see all
the. Here's the goat lady at almost 90, almost 81.
Who's she?
The goat lady?
Oh, the goat lady.
Yeah, you're telling me that, the goat lady.
Oh, yes. Well, she used to drive up. No, she wasn't one of the people. Yeah, she lived a good old age, didn't she? This is an excellent picture of the.
Oh, very nice, yeah. There's the laboratory.
And that shows it.
Well, it does look like it might have been a cabin of a ship, doesn't it?
It was part of it.
Was it taken from a ship? Do you have a picture of your house on Locust?
I do somewhere, but I've been looking and I haven't found it.
Found it.
I did quite a lot of looking to get what I got. No.
I bet you did, yeah.
I'll make a note of that and then I'll find one for you.
Great.
I have to get my own pen. You didn't see the kitchen because it was so hot I closed the door. Unusual.
Oh yeah, I think so, yes.
And the mantle was a piece of redwood and it was rounded. And then a plate rail above the paneling all the way around in the living room.
In the living room, not the dining room. Oh, there wasn't a dining room?
No.
He said it was all one room?
No. The the front door, and then the living room was quite a good size, and then the bay window, and here was the kitchen way over here, and this is where we ate. You know, we ate in the kitchen most of the time because it was more convenient. And you had to go through this swinging door in the past pantry, a good big pantry.
Yeah, butler's pantry.
Into a big kitchen. Yeah, it was a butler's pantry.
They built houses in that period, almost always had a butler's pantry.
Oh, really?
Our house does.
Does it?
Most of the houses of that period do.
Well, it's a good idea.
A good idea, but the houses were designed as though there were servants in the house. And very often there weren't servants in the house.
We didn't have a servant. We had what we called a girl, Mary, the girl, to help out with the washing. And I guess she took care of us when my stayed with us when my folks went out.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, they had a club they called the Merrymakers, and they'd get together these different couples, oh, maybe eight or more couples, and they would walk to wherever the gathering was going to be. And I remember Captain Robinson and his wife lived on the way to Stinson Beach, way up on the hill. And they would start out with a lantern to go to the party. And they'd hike, and, you know, going down was all right, but coming back, it must have been really a rough go to go up.
Well, I think people walked a lot more then.
Yeah. I walk almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
I try to, because it's good for me.
Yeah. Did people have horses in the neighborhood?
In my neighborhood?
Yes. Did they keep their own horses?
We did, but we had them, but they didn't. I don't know anyone else who had horses, except, and we were very fortunate, my brother and I, because we had a pony. And then, you see, my mother rode side saddle. She was a great rider. My father was an Englishman and crazy about horses and races, you know, that I used to call the ups and downs he went to.
Uh-huh.
But no one else that I know of. Though later, as I was a little older, we were very good friends of the Ward family. And they were the granddaughters of Billings, George Billings. Uh-huh. And we had the most wonderful times up there at the Billings place. Marion and Jean, there were five of us who called it our sports club.
Yes.
And they had this steps where the salmon went up to spawn, and then a pond where we went swimming.
Yes.
A beautiful tennis court.
Yes.
A swing and slides. And then the creek, the walled creek, went around the Billings place and down to where the Wards lived in those days. It was Beeman's after. Does that mean anything?
Yes, I know the property.
Well, Harry Beeman was the chauffeur for the Billings, and he took care of the tennis courts, and I just loved him. We all loved him because he was so good to all of us, you know? And he would drive the big Cunningham that they had and take us all up to Johannesburg Ranch in Napa, with the Billings on. But in this creek thing, they had a sp- square forward and square aft boat. And we called it the Billy Goat because we'd get in it and we'd bump the wall. Can you imagine having such a wonderful childhood?
Uh-huh.
And then we'd get hot and go into the house and have sarsaparilla.
Jean Ward Kyler is still living in the house.
Yes, she and Arbor. They're still good friends. Mary and I call Mary every once in a while. Jean and the father of the sport club were Marion and Jean and Margaret Walter and myself and Bob Van Orden, my brother, and George Flynn. Seven of us. And they'd pile us in that big car and take us up for 2 or 3 weeks vacation. We had a wonderful time. I should write a book growing up in Mill Valley.
Now that's a good idea. How can we encourage you to do that?
I think I should. I was going to write down about a picture of my dear. What?
Make a note.
No, I'm going to write a picture of. We always called it Mighty Locust. Now that house is getting old, isn't it?
Yes.
90 years old. My gosh, it is. Same as me.
Well, that's what you said.
Anyway, what else was I going to make the note? I think that'll be
growing up in Mill Valley.
That'll be a good title, wouldn't it?
Yes.
I'll never do it, you know.
Oh, please do. It doesn't have to be a whole book. You can just do a chapter of it, maybe.
If you come and see me again, yes. I'll get out the notes I've written so far.
Okay.
And you can tell me what you think of it.
Okay.
My niece, one of my nieces, read it, and she said, I think you should just send it in sections, you know.
Yeah.
Because the way I have it now, I'd think of something and take off and write, and no connection to the next thought I might have a few days later.
Yeah.
Is that the way it happens?
Sure, and you keep all those pieces.
Yeah, I have them all.
And then later on, you need to write an article for the magazine, or you want to write a book. You take all those pieces,
and
spread all the pieces out, and you just sort of fill in the places in between.
And they can be connected.
Sure.
Well, the reason I haven't done anything is because I've gotten sidetracked. You stop writing.
Oh, yeah.
And you get away from it, you have to go back and start over.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning.
Well, it doesn't have to go from beginning.
Well, mine doesn't.
If you do it in pieces.
My daughter.
You can put the pieces back.
I tell them stories like I'm telling you, you know. And my daughter say, Mother, write that down.
Okay.
Write that down. Keep track of it. And she was so right, because as you get older, you begin to forget, unless you...
But, I mean, this was a great story you started to tell me here about the group at Billings and the...
That could go on forever. You can't have me talking all that much.
Sure.
Yeah, but I'm doing the talking.
Well, I'm listening.
And you're just encouraging me.
Yeah.
I was telling you about their place, but that's right up where you are.
That's right. Well, she took me all through the house.
Jean?
She showed me all the parts of the house, the original parts, the things that were added. She told me the stories about...
She's a very bright woman.
...family came to live there after the earthquake and fire and decided they wanted to stay there.
Yeah.
And so they added to the house.
Many, many families did that.
Yes.
They'd start a summer residence and end up building a
not wanting
to go anywhere else, right? It was such a great place to be.
Oh, it used to be the most heavenly, ideal place for youngsters to grow up. We had fields and fields. We could roam all over. It was a time of safety. Nobody worried about being kidnapped or violence and the horrible things that happen today. We had no worries at all. It's a wonder we weren't stupid when we got grown up, because we never had to think much, you know. It was a different age entirely, but a wonderful age. And we appreciated little things, like if I'd get a new hair ribbon, I'd be thrilled to pieces. When my daughter was growing up, her grandmother'd give her 6 hair ribbons all at once. That's just an example of it. And I'd say, did you thank her, you know? Because she had so much in that kind of... I have to almost put my shoes on, excuse me. Folks on the World Fair. And I imagine they're valuable. I was just crazy about the Palace of Fine Arts and these little bronzes that they had in all the alcoves, and my mother bought that for me. Oh, it was the most beautiful. I've been to lots of World Fairs. Have you traveled much?
Yes, but not widely. Usually, you know, in specific areas. But I've lived in Europe.
I've been to Australia.
And I haven't been to Australia.
Been to the Nordic.
And I've been to Denmark, Sweden.
Oh, did you go to the North Cape?
I didn't get to Finland. I want to go to Finland. But
I didn't go to Finland, but I went to the North Cape.
North Cape?
As far as, and Iceland.
Oh, Iceland. Now, not too many people go to Iceland.
Now, have you been to Alaska?
No, not to Alaska.
Oh, you've got to go to Alaska. It's so wonderful. My second husband spent 16 years in Alaska, which has nothing to do with me loving it, because I wasn't with him. But since then I've gone twice. Second time I took my daughter and son-in-law, and we went inside Passage and then by the Aleutians and over to Tokyo. I'd never been to the Orient, but I've been quite a number of places, all by ship. Except the other day I took a bus tour.
To where?
It was called the National Park Tour, Yosemite and Sequoia. Have you been there?
Uh-huh.
This bus tour was absolutely fabulous. I don't know how they can make any money. I have a friend in Timberlake, which is the next door adult community. Mm-hmm. And she's talked about it, and I said, well, I went to Yosemite many times because I was 17 the first time I drove up there over the old control roads. I drove the family Studebaker. Nobody else in the car could drive. It was wonderful. Anyway, this trip was 32 passengers, and we were gone, I think, 5 days. And they treated us. It was beautiful. And the falls, I've never seen them as full. Like Bridal Veil.
This year was a marvelous year.
Bridal Veil was all over the place. It was just, the wind would blow it, you know. And Yosemite was just a torrent coming down. And I used to swim in the Merced River, because one time we camped in Yosemite. and I go swimming in the river. My golly, you couldn't hear, the river was a raging.
Oh, in the springtime, yeah.
Yeah, but it was a beautiful trip. And I thought, oh, bus, you know, who wants to go on a bus? It was wonderful. Nice people, yeah. Interesting people, 32 people. The bus was elegant. And we stayed at a nice place. And we had dinner at the Iwani.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
And then there's a Tenaya, do you know Tenaya?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Marriott, the hotel man, has built Tenaya Lodge. And it's comparable to the Iwani, uh-huh. Only a little more modernized. But a very, and a beautiful dining room, excellent food. All kinds of people. In fact, it was the first day that they had closed it. And we couldn't have gotten there.
Oh, it was
there.
So crowded.
So crowded.
Yeah.
It was a couple of months
ago. I read about that.
We couldn't have gotten in had they not had reservations for all of us. It was a wonderful experience. I would do it again. But I'd rather, you know, I can't really go on long trips in my car anymore.
Well, I should hope not.
Why?
Too many people out on the road.
I drive down to Marin.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wouldn't do it if I thought I was a menace.
Yeah.
If I didn't feel I had control over it. And I don't think I'll be doing it much longer. I think they're waiting for my car anyway.
Well, the time, you know, times are different, and it's so much more traffic now.
And people
are
rude.
Much ruder. It comes from crowding.
Don't you think people are more rude than they used to be?
Certainly.
You know, it's dog eat dog when you get on that 101. And I think the reason I'd stop so my daughter wouldn't worry. I think she worries.
But you need the car around here, don't you?
Well, see, my dog, when I moved up here, I'd always lived in. Not always, because I lived in up here. When my daughter was 3 years old, I lived here in Sonoma. On account of, it was wartime. They started a cannery where the winery is now, and we lived right next door to the Sebastiani's. And that was to be connected with something, I can't remember what it was. But, because I was thinking about what they can for the armed forces.
Yeah.
They can turkey for their Thanksgiving dinner.
Can turkey.
And I said to my husband, I said, I want to taste that turkey that they're going to have. And he brought a can home for me to taste. I would prefer tuna.
I remember some of those things that used to come in the camp.
Were you in the service?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was stationed in Germany.
Where?
First I was in Heidelberg, and then I was in Darmstadt.
I don't know that one. Heidelberg is lovely.
Heidelberg is lovely. Darmstadt, I liked even better. Darmstadt was close to the Rhine River.
Now, Wiesbaden was where they had most of the armed forces,
mm-hmm.
when I went to Germany.
Air Force in Wiesbaden.
Oh, was that it?
I was in
they didn't like us even then. You know, even though we got to Cologne, and our driver said, this is where you massacred a lot of our women and children. You know, they still. And the Autobahns from the Marshall Plan, they had built them going nowhere just to build them.
Well, that's all different now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
This was 56.
Yeah.
Anyway. My aunt, my maiden aunt who lived with us all her life, gave me the trip. She gave me the trip with my daughter. And then my niece said she wanted to go too. And my aunt said, Sandra's going with you. And I said to myself, I'm not taking Sandra. And so I didn't go for 2 years. And I thought, well, that's silly. I'm cutting off my nose to spite my face. It wasn't against the child, but I thought they should have asked me if I wanted to take her, not just say she's going with you. I should be asked. So anyway, I decide, well, I would take a friend, so there'd be four of us, and be much nicer, because my daughter was 17, and my niece had just graduated from Mills. She was 21. So I paid, invited and paid for a friend to go as my guest. But this was a 3 months first class trip.
Well, in those days, the dollar was worth a lot more than it is now.
And if we had during the war, everybody had a victory garden, the first war. And even when we go up to Napa, to the ranch with the ward, old man Billings would make, he'd come up once in a while and make all the boys dig and plant in the victory garden. He wanted to do a little work.
Uh-huh.
He had been a retired sea captain. He's the grandfather of Jean.
Yes.
And Mary. And, oh, I'd love to tell you about the tennis matches.
Yeah, tell me about the tennis matches.
Well, we saw all the great players play on that court, and Harry would roll it for hours, but it was made of rancherie, you know. Did you know that?
Yeah.
And it was marvelous to play tennis. I used to love tennis because it was springy, not like a hard concrete. I never had played on a grass court, so I wouldn't know. But it was, you could play for hours. And he would, Mr. Billings would let us go to the matches if we didn't make one sound, any one of us. And we were scared to death of him. He was, you know, the girls called him the chief. Or their father was the boss of the chief, and Mr. Billings was, he must have been the chief. And the father was the boss. And they had a bleachers, you know, a place where you could sit to watch the matches. And believe me, we were quiet. And I saw Tilden play there, and I can't remember some of the other great players. And we were playing tennis ourselves, so I guess Mr. Williams thought it would teach us a little bit. Besides, he liked to boss us around. And once in a while, he'd come to the court when we were playing, fellows and girls. And I'd walk all the way up from 90 Locust to play tennis and play tennis all day and then walk home, you know. And one time he didn't have much respect for the, he thought we were all spoiled, I guess. So he'd stand up and say, now you play at the net, Bob. And I would go up there at the net, scared to death. And Mr. Billings had been a tennis player himself, and he'd wham one right in his face, you know. He didn't get the racket up in time. Too bad. But he was that kind of a, he wanted them to be tougher. But he was used to life being that way, you know. As a sea captain, I was. We never saw much of him. But Mrs. Billings was, she was about my size, a little bitty thing. And she was awfully good to us all. They'd invite us to a party, and it would be the most wonderful thing. They'd have box lunches for everybody. They had a Chinaman. By the way, the Chinaman, whatever his name was, would go in the Cunningham when we went up. And Mrs. Billings and the Chinaman and Harry and seven of us in the bag. And I was always, Harry smoked cigars or something. And he would expectorate. And I was always thinking, now where shall I sit? And invariably I'd land right in back of Harry. And the car was a great long thing with jump seats.
And where was the property up here?
At Johannesburg, there was a natural, a lake there, not a natural lake. They had canoes, uh-huh. And we had two canoes, and we'd race Johannesburg. I don't know. I'd have to ask Marion.
Do you think the house is still there?
I don't know. It was a very nice house. And we didn't have to do anything or just have fun. The Chinaman would cook and wait on the tables. But Mr. Billings didn't come because he had a mistress. And she wasn't welcome. And we all hated her by name. We didn't even know her. But we thought she was horrible for no reason except that they didn't like her, so none of us liked her. I don't know where it was. Johannesburg was the name of it. There's no town or anything. Is there?
I don't recognize it, no.
I don't think so. And I used to dance. Not dancing. Not this kind. Aesthetic, I kind of called it, and ballroom. I taught grown-up ballroom dance. But one time I was in a recital many times, but this time they all went up to the ranch in the Cunningham, and I wasn't going to be able to go. So my mother took me by ferry to Vallejo, and then Harry came and met me and took me to the ranch all by myself. My mother went back there into me. But they were so hospitable, wonderful people.
Where did the ferry go that took you to Vallejo? Did it go from Sausalito?
We went from Sausalito. Yeah, because we must have gone by the train to Sausalito. But I don't recall any ferry to Vallejo. But it must have been something went there by ship, because I went by boat.
Did your family keep a car at a later date?
My family?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first one was a Model T. And then my brother was a Ford dealer in Mill Valley for 37 years.
Oh, yes. But that was later.
Yeah.
When did the family first have a car?
When did the Model T's come out?
I think, I'm not sure.
remember what the year was. Maybe 1908?
I don't know, but in those days we used to go for Sunday rides. Uh-huh. Whole family get in the car and go. And in the fall we'd go around Paradise. And my aunt owned the property there, and so did my uncle, part of their inheritance. And my mother owned in Tiburon, too. Because one time she was going to sell a piece of that big bluff at Tiburon. She owned that next to the Kyle place. And she owned the beach in front of Kyle. And she said he stole her sand all the time from her. But she was going to, you know, listen, we were all going to Europe. We were still in under the sixth grade because we were at Park School. And my brother and I went running to school and said we were going to Europe. And then the sale fell through and we didn't go. But I know a funny one about the Model T, too. Someone attached the car for some debt. You know, it must have been when we were low on funds. And this little old policeman from San Rafael came to the house. I thought it was terrible. And he put this great thing on the wheel, or the rear wheel of the Ford. And when he left, my father went out, just took the wheel off and put the spare on. And we went to San Rafael for a ride, and the little guy who put the stopper thing on was directing traffic, and he almost dropped dead. And my father said, you know,
tipped his hat.
Because he was an old timer, the little police fellow in San Rafael. And everybody knew him, and he knew everybody. I guess there weren't that many people. And here we come along, big as life. And he's up there with his arms close looking. I thought it was a good one. Now, those are the things I should put in my story.
Yes, certainly.
And yet we had a very wonderful, rich childhood, Lauren. I never did learn to ride because I was kind of a fearful. And my mother would come out and say, now give your sister a turn, let your sister get on. Our first pony was a Shetland, Tiddlywinks. And I'd get on, and my brother and his friend would poke the pony, and the pony would start to dance. I'd say, let me off, let me. So my brother was a wonderful rider, and I was never very good.
But you drove a car.
Oh, I drove when I was 15.
15.
I knew how to drive, but we didn't have a car when I was 15. My Uncle Tom, just back, taught me it when I was 15. The old low, second, high, reverse. And one time I was working with my brothers, and I was going to go out that evening, and I had wanted to go home and wash my hair or do something, I forget what, at noontime. And I said, can I have a car? And of course he had to worry about insurance on his cars, you know. He said, no. And then he said, why don't you take that Model A? Does that have three pedals?
I don't know.
Anyway, I couldn't remember how. It was so old, the car, that I couldn't remember where the clutch was. I was afraid to drive it, so I didn't get to go home. They had three pedals, those cars. And I'd forgotten this one. Anyway, then we the car, I remember the best, is a big Studebaker touring car. And you could put the top down, and it had disc wheels. And it had a lot of power. And one time, the first time I drove to Yosemite when I was 17, over the control ropes, and they were something, you know, you had to wait, so because there was no room to pass. Anyway, my mother and a friend and a daughter, younger, and then myself and my chum, none of them could drive but me. And I was written up in the Mill Valley Record that I had taken them all the way up to Yosemite and back with them. And I remember driving up the glacier. Did you ever drive up there? And they had big Pierce Arrow stages in those days, huge things. And I used to drive with two pillows in back of me so that I could reach the pedal. And I must have looked awful little. And I saw this thing coming, and I went up the bank to get out of its way. And the fellow, the driver, leaned over and said, "Hold her, Newt." And we got there fine, no problem. But I didn't think of it as a feat, you know, until they wrote it up in the paper. And then I thought, well, I guess not many people do that. But that car could climb a house in second gear. It had terrific power. Absolutely marvelous power.
So you were an automobile fan.
It was Sagebrush Green. Well, I wrote to my son-in-law for Father's Day and sent him a card, and he has it's an English antique car that he bought and refurbished and rebuilt and re-everything. And I found this card with an old Duesenberg on it. Happy Father's Day. And I had ridden in the Duesenberg up to Petaluma from Mill Valley. And it was quite a car. And I'd gone to school with this girl who lived in Petaluma, and it was New Year's Eve. And this chap who had the car was related to Sylvia somewhat. And he'd been a racing driver, or he still was. And there were about two fellows and two girls, and the driver. And we were so thrilled. No top, the top was down. And he'd take those turns, right angle turn at 40 miles an hour. Brrr. And we thought, oh, it was just so exciting. So I told the story to my son-in-law with the card that I'd ridden in a Duesenberg. But then I rode a lot of fancy cars because he was a cousin of sorts, but John Reed's widow married after John Reed died, married again, and that was that strain of the family, not descended from John Reed per se, but anyway. This cousin's name was Boyle, you know, Boyle Park?
Yes,
and all that.
Sure.
That section of the family.
Yeah, Boyle family.
And Hugh Boyle had three daughters, and we were friends. We were cousins. You know. All the Spanish people are cousins, they say. Anyway.
Makes a good story.
Yeah. But he used to... Hugh Boyle used to go with quite a fast crowd, racing drivers, horse racing. And they'd go to different places and have these fabulous parties. one party way down this, on the East Bay someplace that my mother and father went to, and I remember them talking about it. The barn, it was given in the barn, the horse barn, I guess something different. Anyway, Hugh Boyle went from raising racehorses and collecting them to cars. And he used to throw his three daughters and invite me, and we'd sit in the back seat. And one time I thought we were going to the end of the world. We went over to Richmond and stayed overnight. Uh-huh. Went on a ferry boat. Uh-huh. And we were in a cord.
A cord.
Sea. Do you know automobile?
Cord with a C.
Yeah.
No, not very well, but that's the famous one.
I had an interesting life, didn't I?
Yes, very.
I think so.
So I wish you'd write it down.
I can't.
It's another good story.
Which story?
The one you just told me.
That one? Yeah. I have more. I have a lot more, but I can't send it anymore.
Okay.
I have to write my book. Might be able to sell it.
Well, yes.
Well, my niece said to put just maybe sections like in the Marin Historical.
Yeah? Well, how are we going to talk you to doing it?
I'm doing it.
Oh, you are? Okay.
But I haven't lately. Oh, I had this good friend from high school days. We've been friends for 73 years. And she came over from Lowell in San Francisco. And she was a little thing. In fact, they called us the Tiny Two at high school. But all the fellows fell for her like a ton of bricks because she was a newcomer, you know, from the big city. And she and I became chums then in high school. And she died the other day, and I figured out I'd known her 73 years. But when I've been widowed twice, and I love to go travel. And even when I have my daughter, I'd take her along, but we'd go. I'd get itchy feet on New Year's Day. Oh, New Year's Day was a wonderful day to go down to the desert or something. And Coralie always came along. She has had a pretty name, Coralie. C-O-R-A-L-I-E. And her last name was Sigourney. Coralie Sigourney. Isn't that a pretty name?
Nice.
Anyway, she went everywhere. And every place I ever lived, she came to visit. And after I lost my second husband, I said, how would you like to drive east with me? I said, I want to go Maple Leaf One. And she had never been to Yellowstone, she'd never been to Yosemite, she'd never been to Glacier. And I told her I'd take her those places. And so we started off, we're both over 70. And my second husband was 6'4". And so we had a big car. We never bought a new one, but we bought used Cadillacs. And because it was great for him, it was big, and I could move the seat up and he could move it back. And so when he died, I had this sedan DeVille, gold colored. And that's what we went. And we had a marvelous trip. And she didn't want to spend much, and I didn't either. So we would eat our lunch out of it. George, my husband, I'd given him an ice chest, you know, where you could. And we went up up to Glacier. What did we do on the way? We did Yellowstone first, and then up to Glacier, and then to Leavenworth, some town there, not Leavenworth. That's where the prison is. So the Maple Leaf one, oh, it was a wonderful trip. And it was two-laner all the way, except they'd have the United Nations meeting in Ottawa. And about 10 miles before we got to Ottawa, it was a four-lane highway. And four-lane highway about 10 miles on the other side. Other than that, it was a two-laner, which I was so used to, because my friends used to get in my car and they said, now she'll probably drive on two cow paths and anything to get off the main road. But really, who wants to be on the main road, you know? The interesting things are off the main drag. Anyway, I thought she'd do part of the driving, but I let her drive once, and the two-laner had a drop of about 3 inches or more, and she kept going off. She had a cataract, or two cataracts, and I couldn't let her drive anymore, so I did all the driving, and we came to I said, look in the book and see where we should stop. No reservations or anything. And she said, oh, here's a place, Sturgeon Falls, that sounds nice. I said, oh, that sounds lovely, we'll go there. Well, Sturgeon Falls was not a sign of water or a waterfall or a creek or anything. Three motels. And by that time I'd gotten smart, so I tried to hide the car behind some kind of a bush or something. And I said, you go in that one, I'll go in this one. Well, I went in this one and it smelled like a hospital. And I thought it was a terrible place. And she came out of the one she was in and she said, he wanted too much money. I can't remember, but this was in 1970 something. Anyway, I said, well, we don't want to pay that much. And she said, no, she didn't want to either. So I said, well, I'll go in and see if I can talk and just tell them we want a bed for overnight. And I said, couldn't you give us a better rate? And he said, you're driving a big old Cadillac. I don't know what you're kicking about the price for. I said, thank you very much, we'll go on. He said, you're going to pay more, and we did. But we didn't stay there. But see, he figured that was...
Yeah.
But it didn't cost as much for that trip, I'll tell you, because I was very careful. It was fun. Beautiful trip.
That's the way we travel. We sort of wander and go from place to place.
You know, yeah. And when I got to Superior, I thought I was back at the Pacific Ocean. It was so big. And you go around this, it goes like that in the road, and nothing but water out there. And we got to Montreal. And I didn't know where the roads were, the turnoff or anything. And I said, we've got to start going down because we don't really end up the Atlantic Ocean. And so I said, I'm going to turn off the next turnoff. And I could see that there was a city, it was Montreal. And I said, roll down the window. And I must have been a push button. And I said, ask that man how we get to Vermont, and he rattled off back in French, because nobody spoke English. But my friend had some French, and I can speak French when I'm in France, but I can't otherwise. And he gave us directions that she could understand. So we thanked him and went on our way. Vaguely, I knew where to go. And all of a sudden, I realized we were on a four-lane highway and a big bridge. And I said, this is wrong. And I said, hang on, I'm going to make a turn.
Oh.
So I waited until the traffic sort of stopped. And then I swung around, but I didn't quite make it. The car was so big. And then all these dumb Frenchmen started to blow their horns at us. Oh. But then, anyway, I backed up and got the right way. But the license was California, and they were all impressed. And these two little faces, I guess, and they laugh, you know, California, and they'd whistle, blow their horns, scare you half to death. And I told her after that the rather brave occasion. And then I drove all the way back, and we came in the middle. And you know, I learned a lot, because being a Californian, you're a braggart. Because you know you have everything in California. Were you born in California?
No.
And you're not a braggart, I am. But, we went in the middle there, and we went to Arkansas, was the first state that we went. We went down from Jericho, Vermont, where my daughter lived, and we went down to Sturbridge Village, where they had a history of the first settlers. And we stayed overnight there, then we said goodbye to the family, and she, Paula and I started off. And we went through Arkansas. And I was impressed with our country. The whole country is so beautiful. I thought Arkansas would be an ugly state. It's beautiful. Except that they had one of those terrible rainstorms where you can't see a thing. It got almost dark. And my friend said, pull over. Well, you couldn't see what you'd be pulling over, and you might be going over a cliff. And I was afraid of the trucks. But we made it. We just... And she said, make the windshield wipers go faster. They were on as fast as they would go. There was a few scary things like that, but we were lucky.
Sound like a good trip?
Wonderful. I would love to do it again.
Well, where are you going to go next?
Pardon?
Where are you going to go next?
I don't know. I've lost... Well, since I had two cataract operations, and since I've gotten deaf, I don't know where I'd go next. I have no burning desire to go anywhere. I'd like to go to Spain, because my antecedents come from there. And I'd like to go to Ireland. Those are two I've missed. Did you go to Ireland?
Yeah.
Did you? Was it worth going?
Oh, beautiful.
Is it?
Beautiful. Yeah. But green and wet.
Well.
It's very different from here.
Yeah. I've been over to England twice and visited relatives there. But I'd love to drive it. Three times I've been. Oh yeah, my brother-in-law and I drove last time. Now he's gone. But he and I drove the southern route. And he was disgusted with me because I didn't care about the Carlsbad Caverns. I don't like to be I guess I have a bit of claustrophobia. And I didn't want to see all those baths and things. But he was free to do as he pleased. But we had a wonderful trip. And we went to New Orleans and, oh yeah, New Mexico, what's that? No.
Arizona.
Arizona. Oh, what's the place in Arizona where everybody should see? History, you know, Arizona. The Alamo?
No, Alamo, Texas.
Would that be Arizona?
No.
Where is it?
Alamo's in Texas.
Well, what is it in Arizona? Anyway, we stopped. And we got to Jacksonville. We were his idea. This was all his idea. He was going to go all around Florida. We got to Jacksonville, and it was 98 degrees and hot as blazes. He was driving my car, same Cadillac. So I'd been over the mountains in Virginia, the Blue Ridge Mountains. That's a beautiful place. Oh, I've done that a couple of times. And I wanted him to see the scenery and nature. And he said, well, we're not going to go that way. And I said, well, it's beautiful. Anyway, we went to Chesapeake Bay. He was a road builder, engineer of sorts. My husband was a civil engineer. But we went over bridges and then you go tunnel under the water. Have you done it? And he loved that. That was all right with me. I didn't say I hadn't done it. But I love the Blue Ridge better. When did you do that?
Oh, long, long time ago. First in the Army, I was stationed at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, at the engineering school. So I was in that area, and I went to see the historic homes. And I went to the Blue Ridge Mountains, and I went to, all the various places in that area around Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, yeah. That's a big bay, isn't it?
Very lovely place. It was then, I think. Largely overcrowded too, like most other good places.
Every place is.
Well, it's funny, where do all these people come from?
The boatloads of people.
Oh no, these people that are doing the crowding aren't off boats. These are.
I know, but we used to have a quota of foreigners coming in.
Yeah.
Who did away with that quota? We'd only allow a certain number a year from each individual country.
Yeah.
And I don't know who, I could have an argument with the man who did away with the quota. Do we have a quota now?
Well, it doesn't really make too much difference what quota we have because there are so many people that come in illegally.
The borders.
There's no way to control the quotas anymore.
No, I guess they.
But I don't think it's so much foreigners. I think it's Americans that are coming from, perhaps out of the Midwest or something that are moving to the more desirable places, where they can.
Well, I've always said California's always been the most generous state in the union. People could come here and get. Welfare right away, they could get help. We've always given and given and given.
Well, we're not being so generous now.
Might not
we've
be.
We've got an awful lot of homeless people that are getting nothing.
Yeah, where were the homeless people when I was growing up? We never had homeless people.
No.
If they were homeless, they'd sit on the sidewalk and sell pencils or hold a cup.
Conversation.
And we had Lem Porters in San Francisco, G.T. Marsh. And you know what?
He had his estate right up the canyon from us.
Yeah.
The chimney is still there.
Did you know him? No.
No.
Did you know the sons?
I met them in the store in San Francisco. The store was still there on Sutter Street.
The jewelry section was Lucian's baby. G.T. had no use for it. And he was used to Oriental help, you know. He couldn't stand us because he felt we didn't work hard enough. We weren't pulling a rickshaw or something. Anyway, we didn't like him, naturally. But Lucian was a very, you know, amiable fellow. And he would give me, tell me what he wanted. He'd bring up maybe a jade cabochon, emerald jade, and he'd say, now design a brooch for Mrs. So-and-so or some movie actress or something. And he had, Lucian had discovered the idea from the old Japanese sword guards of using iron, metal, dull, with the fine jewelry, with diamonds and jade and all the rest of it. So I used to work with a magnifying glass because I do an actual size of the stone and the facets and the whole thing for $65 a month. And commute was for something, and then it went up, I think. Anyway, then finally it came along to 29 and the Depression, and no one could afford to buy fine jewelry. I used to, there was a friend of mine who did lamps, designed the shades, and sewed them, silk. And we used to, she'd have to buy a thread, and I'd have to buy a paintbrush or something, pen. And we'd go out, and we'd meet and have tea at the Maiden Lane or something. And now that was wrong, but we were paid so little. We didn't feel a bit dishonest. You know, the hours were long, and if you had a customer or anything, you stayed and missed a couple of ferry boats and got home, God knows when. Of course, Julie, the lamp gal, she lived in San Francisco, Julie Dodd. But we were let go anyway, the whole, G.T. got mad at the whole thing. They weren't making money because of the luxurious things they sold. And so he fired the whole troop of girls. And I got a job at Gump's in the Oriental, doing the same thing, only selling too. And there was very little in the jewelry design thing. But I was there when Gloria Swanson married that young Irishman, Terrence somebody. And in the Oriental Department of Gump's, they had a big Buddha with a fountain and you threw your pennies in. And old Gloria Swanson came in, and we all stood around and watched her. She made it, she was about my size too. She made a big to-do about making her wish and throwing her money in and stopped the whole work for the whole half hour or so. We just gaped at her. But it was an interesting place to work. Beautiful things in there. And it was, all these things are good. Wherever one does, lives or goes or looks or does work, adds to their knowledge.
Yes.
I learned about oriental things, but I'm not an expert. But they're beautiful, aren't they?